So what exactly did you want to talk about?
It's pretty personal.
Pertaining to your sex life.
And that's a police matter?
79 and stiff as a varnished eel.
A varnished eel.
My third wife took up with a bartender because I got distracted by my book on the Pope. Now, you spend 6 months in the Vatican, and you see what happens to your testicles.
In New York City, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. These are their stories.
Hey guys, welcome to Munch My Benson. My name's Adam. It's been real effing hot here in New York today, Josh. Real effing hot. It's like 98 or something today. Very humid. It's miserable. Just absolutely miserable day.
Yeah, that's gross.
I'm joined on the line by Josh. How are things up in your neck of the woods, Josh?
Pretty temperate.
Yeah?
Yeah, saw a lot of Austin people on Saturday.
Weird.
It was John and Cassie's, like, they're doing like a 10th anniversary thing, and they're also about to leave Minneapolis to go back to Austin.
Nice.
So I saw Jeremy.
Nice.
Molly.
Nice.
Yeah.
They fly up to hang out?
Well, no, they're in Milwaukee now.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
As of like a week ago.
Oh, badass. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, saw them, and then, you know, a bunch of Jeremy and Cassie and John's friends, so.
Right on. That's cool, man. Everybody's moving to the upper Midwest.
All the other Austin people were just here because of the party.
So. Nice. Well, that sounds fun.
It was fun.
So, got caught in a hefty downpour this afternoon. That was kind of fun. We, like, went and met Megan at a park. And then we walked and had a beer. And while we were having the beer, it rained extremely hard. It's been these very tropical Galveston-like showers here in the summertime recently. You're outside and it's like one drop of rain and then all of a sudden it rains an inch in the next 10 minutes. So that was cool. But we were sitting under a pop tent, so we barely got wet.
Right on.
Yeah, I had a delicious beer while I was sitting there. Some pale ale from Maine. I forget the brewery. Right now, I'm drinking a delicious PBR because I'm back shopping at Duane Reade again.
I've got a Bell's Too Hard.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, man. Should we just jump into this or have you been watching anything interesting recently?
We're four into the rehearsal. Holy shit.
It's wild, isn't it?
Wow.
I haven't watched the fourth one yet, so no spoilers, but it's...
Man alive. What a show. Like, everyone needs to stop. I mean, don't stop listening to the podcast, but yeah. Stop what you're doing otherwise and watch the rehearsal. It is wild.
I can guarantee you that there's nothing else like it that's ever been made. And
no.
The thing I try to like liken it to, which doesn't really make sense, but it's like Synecdoche, New York, if it were good, basically.
Yeah.
Because it's the onion wrapped inside an enigma, man.
It is so nuts.
With Nathan Fielder wandering around with that walking desk thing that he has, which I fucking love.
Yeah, the computer like strapped to his chest, basically.
Yeah, where he's going, see, now most people would regard that as an anti-Semitic slur.
Oh, Jesus H. Christ. Just utter insanity.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I am really loving it so far. Glad you started it.
Well, I think I'd only seen the first episode, but I got Jackie to start watching.
Yeah.
So.
And the first one is like, oh, this is really weird that they're doing this. But I guess once you figure out what's going on, it sort of makes sense what they're doing. And then it gets substantially weirder.
It just keeps going and going and going and going and going. I mean, it's rehearsals for rehearsals for rehearsals for rehearsals.
Exactly.
And it's all like still sort of coming from that weird, like, this is all because he's so profoundly lonely place.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a special kind of evil genius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Highly recommended.
Oh, yeah. It is the most wild thing that you can kind of imagine. Anyway.
But I think we should get talking about this episode.
So this week we are watching season 16, episode 16, December Solstice. Having just gotten the news that monstrous super pimp Johnny D is Noah's biological father at the end of Undercover Mother, the episode preceding this one, Liv asks Barbara what might happen to a, quote, theoretical child Johnny D had with Ellie Porter, to which Rafa says Noah's parentage doesn't have to become part of the court record. We're then mercifully granted a reprieve from Baby Doe Land, veering into a literati dinner party where famed septuagenarian author Walter Briggs wanders around not recognizing anyone while being propped up by his much younger Melrosian trophy wife, who clearly cannot be trusted because once he exits the party, his daughters ambush them outside the party, telling him they aren't allowed in to see him, only to see new wife Charmaine hurry him off in their town car. The daughters rush into SVU the next morning, claiming Charmaine is pumping their infirmed dad full of erectile dysfunction drugs to elicit a pregnancy, raping a man who is too senile to consent and hazarding his death in the process. The Briggs' housekeeper corroborates the daughter's claims, but not without letting Carisi know that old dudes should just fade into oblivion without getting their fuck on. Ralisi are sent to interview Carisi's literary hero, Sonny being told to keep his fandom out of it. Briggs lays on the love of fucking his wife pretty thick, and then as soon as they get back to Barbara's office to break down the case for Barbara, the housekeeper calls with news that Briggs has been rushed off to the hospital with a heart attack. When Benson and Carisi get to the hospital, Charmaine beat everyone there with a private ambulance and yanked him out of there against doctor's orders. The Ambo driver is tracked down and tells them that she tried to get him to drive them to the airport, which he refused, leading her to have them let out on 57th Street where they hailed a cab so she could abscond with her sick husband to Canada in the middle of winter. Amorisi pull up in front of the plane as Charmaine's trying to scurry away, leading them before a Westchester judge who eventually is convinced that he may not be all there and should at least be checked out to ascertain whether his daughters need to step in as guardians. Briggs has another heart attack in the hospital in Westchester, this one finishing him off, and Camaro rush out to try to ensure that an NYC ME gets to do the autopsy to determine if Charmaine's actions led to Walter's death, getting there just as he's being loaded into the hearse. At the ME's office, ME Rudnick tells them that either just before or just after his death, he'd gotten off one last load by way of rectal probe electro-ejaculation.
Fantastic which Barbara, stuff.
Which Barbara thinks sounds pretty gross. Gross enough, in fact, that he's like, I know I wasn't on board with prosecuting this before, but electrojacking is a bridge too far. As the trial plays out, Barbara concurrently deals with having to put his grandmother in an assisted living home because neither he nor his mother have the time to take care of her themselves. Just as the daughters have begun to make their case against their evil stepmother on the stand, a video from Beyond the Grave is released of a cogent Walter Briggs from 3 years prior, telling the world how great he was, how shitty his rival authors were, and what a joy Charmaine was despite his daughters being such colossal assholes to her. When his video plays in court, he tells the world that he cut himself off from his daughters, not Charmaine, effectively pantsing his aspirant playwright daughter. Charmaine testifies that he knew he was dying and wanted to go out like a man. Then the other daughter agrees to testify for the defense because the shitty playwright daughter drove the wedge between their father and the two of them. Barbara agrees to drop the charges because there's no fucking way a jury is going to convict Charmaine. Carisi gets assigned first edition of one of Walter's books. Barbara goes to his grandmother's building, where she's just died, and Barbara and his mother are blaming themselves, and we get a, did Barbara's abuelita just kill herself rather than move into a place that served skunk? Dick Wolf.
I mean, it's possible.
I watched it twice. The subtext is there, but, like, she is Catholic.
You know, there are ways to kill yourself without killing yourself, though, I think. So, you know, who knows? Maybe she just gave up. So, Josh, I just found something pretty wild while you were reading that.
Nice.
We'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
Fans of this episode might appreciate this because I'm told that this is a favorite on Reddit for fans of the Barson connection.
Okay.
There's some like loving moments between them, especially at the beginning.
Yeah, like the 85-year-old bit at the end too.
Yeah, exactly. So apparently this is like the this launched 1,000 ships, I guess.
Sure, yeah.
It definitely launched at least one graphic.
Wild fanfic?
Fanfic. So yeah,
that's nice.
So we'll get into that in a little bit.
We do have guest stars.
We have several guest stars. Some of them are famous.
Yes. Now, we have already talked about quite a few of these.
Yeah.
We've talked about Robert Vaughn, who's playing Walter Briggs in Much More Benson Episode 61. Seems like a weird side hustle for washed up catchers with bad knees. We're discussing Season 8, Episode 2, Clock.
Yep.
Then we've talked about Susie Essman, who's playing defense attorney Arlene Heller in Munch My Benson, Episode 65. That's how you get throat gonorrhea, kids.
Yep.
Where we're discussing Season 16, Episode 19, three episodes after this, Granting Immunity. Then we've got Sharon Washington, who's playing Judge V. Hayes. We discussed her back in Munch My Benson, Episode 54. I really gotta do a rectal, so... We're talking about that Andrew McCarthy star vehicle. Season 1, Episode 22, Slaves. This is the third character we've seen her play, as she was also in Hooked.
Nice.
And then lastly, we've got Jason Bowen playing Devin Wallace, the ambulance driver. He was in Season 18, Episode 10, Motherly Love, where he's playing a detective. That was discussed back in Munch My Benson, Episode 77. Given the genital geometry of everything, we don't know that it wasn't the poop shoot.
Did we not discuss Jefferson Mays, or had we decided we're waiting until
we're waiting on him. Yeah. We're absolutely waiting on him until we hit the actual, like, the episode we really need to talk about.
I love him. He would have been the perfect, like, replacement for Warner if they just kept him going instead of doing whatever it is that they did to him. But
oh, man, it is something. But yeah, we're going to hold off on him. I'm going to hold off on Sandy Duncan as well. Nice. And there's, I think, one other actor who is in another one that we haven't seen that I'm going to wait on.
Nice.
But we have Marcia Cross here playing Charmaine Briggs. She was born in Marlborough, Massachusetts, to a teacher and personnel manager. She graduated from Marlborough High School and received a half scholarship to Juilliard, where she got her BFA in acting. She later got a master's in psychology from Antioch University, Los Angeles. That was way later, like, I don't know, 15 years ago.
Nice.
She's best known for her main cast roles in Desperate Housewives and Melrose Place, the former netting her an Emmy nomination and three Golden Globe nominations. She's been main cast in Everwood, The Edge of Night, and One Life to Live, and had recurring roles in Quantico, Boy Meets World, Ned and Stacey, Knots Landing, and You, and had prominent one-off guest spots in Cheers and Seinfeld.
Yep.
She was Rebecca's sister in Cheers. She's been in the films Bad Influence, Female Perversions, Just Peck, and Bringing Up Bobby. She was the longtime companion of actor Richard Jordan, who was 25 years her senior and died from a brain tumor in 1993. Mm. She later married stockbroker Tom Mahoney in 2006 and had fraternal twins by way of in vitro fertilization just before her 45th birthday. She had anal cancer in 2017 and 2018, which is now in remission. And because no one wants to talk about anal cancer, because it's embarrassing, she's become an activist about it.
Oh, well, good for her.
Yep.
Josh wants to talk about anal cancer.
Just going to let that sit there. I'm glad you're well, Marcia.
Yeah, likewise.
Mercedes Rule is playing, said Lucia Barba?
Lucia.
I thought he said Lucille at one point in the episode, but whatever. She's born in Jackson Heights, Queens, to a Germano-Irish FBI agent father and a Cubano-Irish schoolteacher mother, growing up in other states as dictated by her father's assignments. She got her BA in English from College of New Rochelle. Her career started in regional theater, beginning at the Denver Center Theater Company. She was almost cast in Season 6 of Saturday Night Live, losing out to Denny Dillon. Her first starring role on Broadway was in 1984's I'm Not Rappaport, and she won the first of her two Obies that year for her performance in The Marriage of Bette and Boo. In 1991, she won an Oscar for her supporting role in The Fisher King and a Tony for her performance in Neil Simon's Lost in Yonkers. She was later nominated for two more Tonys. She's been in the films The Warriors, although she was basically an extra in The Warriors. She had lines, but I don't even remember her in it. So yeah, she's in the films The Warriors, Heartburn, Radio Days, The Secret of My Success, Big, Married to the Mob, Crimes and Misdemeanors, Lost in Yonkers, Last Action Hero, Gia, The Minus Man, and Hustlers. She had recurring roles in Frasier, Entourage, Power, and Bull. She's in two different episodes of the original series as different characters. She's on the faculty of HB Studio in New York.
Nice.
And she was married to painter David Geiser from 1999 until his death in 2020. She still has. He had an adopted son, Jake. She had a child when she was 28 and put him up for adoption. And then when he turned 21, came back into her life. And he is the godfather of their adopted son.
Nice. She had quite a run there.
She really did.
Late 80s.
Yeah, late 80s through the, you know, through the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Then we've got Emily Bergel, who's playing Judith Briggs, the non-playwright sister. She was born in Milton Keynes, England, to an Irish mother and English architect father. They moved to Denver when she was 6 and then to Glenview, Illinois when she was 10. She attended Glenbrook South High School and Grinnell College, where she got a BA in English and theater, also studying for a semester of her undergrad at the National Theater Institute at the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center. Later, she received more acting training at HB Studio, where we were just talking about Mercedes Rule being a faculty member there, though probably not at the same time. She started acting in theater, appearing in a production of Romeo and Juliet at San Diego's Old Globe Theater in 1998, opposite Neil Patrick Harris. The next year, she was the lead in The Rage, Carrie 2. She's been in the films Happy Camper, The Hard Easy, and Blue Jasmine. She was main cast in a Steven Spielberg miniseries, Taken. Obviously not the same Taken.
Yeah. Not that Taken.
Yeah, not that Taken. she was also main cast in Men in Trees and Shameless, where she had a recurring role that turned into a main cast role for a season. She had recurring roles in Providence, Gilmore Girls, The Good Wife, Southland, Desperate Housewives, The Nick, American Crime, Mindhunter, How to Get Away with Murder, Dirty John, and The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She's also in one episode of Criminal Intent. And we've got Susan Porfar, who's playing Delilah Briggs. She was born in Goshen, New York, to an Iranian father and a Brooklynite mother. She graduated magna cum laude from Brown. She won an Obie and a Theater World Award for her performance in the off-Broadway production of Tribes. She's had recurring roles in Black Box, Power, Elementary, Scandal, The Sinner, House of Cards, The Loudest Voice, Winning Time, and The Staircase. She's in one episode of Criminal Intent. You've also perhaps seen her in the films A Journal for Jordan, In the Heights, Christine, not the one with the car and Alexandra Paul. And
yeah, that's the one with the like the sentient car, right?
Well, the car that's in love with Rodney Dangerfield's son in Back to School.
Yeah.
Also Manchester by the Sea, Irrational Man, and Alex of Venice. Sorry. Last one I'm going to talk about is Michelle Hurst, who's playing Miss Thwaites, the housekeeper. She was born in Brooklyn, graduated from Mount Holyoke College. She started in theater, then in her 30s, started getting TV and film roles. She was main cast in season 1 of Orange is the New Black. She's in 4 episodes of the original series, 3 other episodes of SVU, 1 Criminal Intent, 1 Chicago Med, and 1 New York Undercover. All of which are in this universe.
Yeah, nice.
She's also been in the films Born on the 4th of July, Airheads, Smoke, I Shot Andy Warhol, Stepmom, In the Cut.
Yeah.
Every time I mention In the Cut, I want to make a joke about how someone is watching Meg Ryan masturbate in it. Anyway. Sherry Baby, Choke, All Good Things, and Frances Ha. On Christmas of 2013, she was in a serious car accident and had to be put in a 16-day coma while doctors performed surgeries close to her spine. But she's fine now.
Good.
Apparently.
I don't remember her role in Airheads well enough to know if
that... Nor do I, although I've seen it relatively recently. I've seen both that and Tapeheads relatively recently.
Nice, nice. Both classics.
Yeah.
Is Thwaites a common last name? I don't think I've ever heard of anybody named Thwaites. And it seems like they're like missing like a, you know, like another kind of like
missing letters, but it's not a Chernuchin season. So like, I assume that like, I don't know, someone in the writer's room had some friend of theirs with a last name Thwaites that, oh, Let's get that in there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe
Chernuchin is absolutely making up names. Holkloff. Like, but yeah, this is a Warren Light season. So there's a modicum of professionalism and thought that's put into these episodes.
This episode pulls off the rare feat for an SVU and that it has.
Well, is it pulling off or is it really like stuck up its ass and then pushed out with electro ejaculation?
Sure.
Well, it's not pulled off. It's.
it's kind of forced off.
Yeah.
but yeah, they jerked off a B plot that actually made sense.
Yeah, it's weird how it's presented because it doesn't show up until minute 20, but that's largely a byproduct of it being a Barba B plot, and you know, yeah. he doesn't have much to do in the beginning of the episode with cause.
Okay, we see him talking to Liv, right? So we kind of have been introduced to Barba.
We're like,
already
oh,
in the episode.
Barba's a character. This guy, we saw him in the first minute of the episode, so he's a real person, right?
He's not just the person they're talking about doing something fabulous, but he's not on screen, right? Yeah, it's like, right, oh, he's right. In Gstaad skiing this weekend. Yeah.
Or St. Bart's. He was also in St. Bart's.
He was in St. Bart's in another one. But yeah, I mean, there's a B plot that not only gives us character development of one of the principal cast members,
but ties in thematically,
but
with
also
the
ties back yes. with the rest of the episode. It's like shocking to see this. I've been really balls deep in season 19 with my recent edits.
Undiscovered Country is just so brutal.
It was shocking to me to see something that was like a well-written plot. I was blown away.
Now, I guess we should touch real quickly on the fact that this episode is loosely based on the drama that surrounded Casey Kasem and his family around the time of his death, because
that's not the only thing it's loosely based on, too. You tell yours and I'll tell mine.
I didn't look anything up about that. I remember it being a thing, but I didn't look it up. Obviously, the model for Walter Briggs seems like it's Norman Mailer.
It's 100% Norman Mailer. Norman Mailer had six wives. He famously got in a fight with Gore Vidal backstage at the Dick Cavett show and then went on stage and they had it out on stage, which is referenced. I forget the other guy's name, but they've referenced that.
Yeah.
I mean, he even looks like Walter Briggs or looked like him.
He also
was a huge, overcompensating for being a small, wiry man, had to be a macho dickhead his whole career. That's like his
also
persona.
He was convicted of assault after stabbing his second wife, Adele Morales, with a penknife, nearly killing her and serving 3 years probation.
Yeah.
That's where the throwing the wife through the plate glass window comes in.
Yeah, 100%.
I've not read Norman Mailer because he's just supposed to be such a colossal asshole that I don't really care to.
And he's a very good writer. I've read some of his essays. I've read excerpts of another thing that was referenced in here, which is Armies of Night, which is his book about Vietnam.
Sure.
It's mostly about the anti-war movement, but it is about Vietnam.
Right. And for that, he won the Pulitzer
Book Award,
Prize,
I think, right? Oh,
Pulitzer Prize for nonfiction and the National Book Award. Both.
Yeah.
He also won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction for The Executioner's Song.
Yeah.
And he was co-founder of the Village Voice, which we've talked about before.
Absolutely.
But yeah, they're using Mailer for the... Because, I mean, it'd be really weird to do it about Casey Kasem and just happen to be about an old DJ. but yeah, so that's going on here. Let's just get into this. There's a lot of Barba in this episode. Like, we get him in the first scene.
There's a lot of Barba in this episode.
Every time I hear Johnny D's name, I fucking laugh at how dumb it is.
I know. It's,
it's
you have
so
to make-
stupid.
This guy is critically important to the main character's arc.
They say in this episode that he's probably trafficked every sex worker in New York. That's how big and awful he is. Everyone who's a sex worker in New York,
he's raped
he's
all of them.
He's trafficked and raped.
He's broken them all in and raped them.
And they name him Johnny fucking D.
We're talking like... literally thousands of people, right?
Yep.
At least.
Asinine.
Johnny D, man. I mean, it could be Vance Dennis. It could be worse.
I think Vance Dennis is better than Johnny D. So the dinner or the gathering at the Elysium Club that they're at is Literary Lions when novelists roared and the world listened.
Yeah.
Fucking Norman Mailer, whatever. Yeah. I have seen Tough Guys Don't Dance, which he directed.
Oh, nice. Is it good?
No, very bad. Like, they did it on How Did This Get Made? Nice. It's spectacularly terrible.
Nice.
Very campy.
The other guy, they missed a casting choice because the other author, like, he's dressed like Gore Vidal,
but
he's
does not look like
him. And he's not nearly as flamboyantly irritating as Gore Vidal. And that would be a just a fun thing for your reel, to go fucking all out.
Sure. To go full gore. So then, you know, there's the... Charmaine is rushing him off when the daughters
show up outside. And then we find out about her scheme, which is...
it a scheme?
This is very much like a Total Recall-esque kind of plot, because we'll never know if it's a scheme or not.
I don't think it is. I think it's fairly...
You think that she's honestly just trying to protect his machismo and keep his...
I mean, she literally gets the last ounce of his machismo to... fertilize her.
Yeah, but she wants to keep his eel fully varnished without him knowing that...
That is the grossest fucking line. 79 and stiff as a varnished eel. Man. I mean, it was vivid. I'll give them that.
Yeah, it sure
was.
Yeah.
Now, the two daughters come in the next morning after getting stiffed on the sidewalk, and...
Well, not as stiffed as Charmaine was.
No. Not nearly. But Charmaine's absolutely teeing him up for it. Like, she's into his stiff, varnished eel. Now, Carisi comes in and says, "Hey, Sarge, there's two women here who will only speak to someone in charge." Huge red flag that I did not really clock the first time I was watching. But on the second time, it's like, oh, no, these are Karens. This is, I want to speak to your manager.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But I guess if your father is as vain and terrible as Norman Mailer probably was, sure. then he would do something like that. Like, cut you out of his life too. Because he didn't like your adaptation.
I mean, if it was trash, though. Anyway, so we find out that Carisi's the inappropriate fanboy of this novelist, which is fun.
Carisi's fun in this episode.
Yeah.
I love the kind of the sunny that we get to see. In
sure.
The,
yeah. It's definitely sunny young. In this episode. Uh-huh. It's not Dominic or Carisi. It's sunny.
Yeah.
Now, in this scene, she says, you know, it's penal law section 130.25, sexual intercourse with a person who is incapable of consent because of mental disability or incapacitation. Thankfully, someone in the IMDb goof section looked this up, so I didn't have to.
Nice.
But it says that 30.25 is the crime of rape in the third degree, which deals mostly with statutory rape. Article 130.30 is rape in the second degree, which is a crime where someone's charged for having sexual intercourse with a person who cannot consent due to being mentally disabled. So they missed it by 0.5.
A few. Yeah. Couple paragraphs down.
Indeed. Now, do these girls really think their dear old asshole dad doesn't want to fuck his way into the grave? Like, it's completely delusional. This guy would absolutely want to fuck himself to death. If he could go out that way, he would.
I mean, that's his entire persona, right?
Yeah.
He's chasing the fucking Hemingway dragon. Like, he wasn't as big or cool as Hemingway. Mm-hmm. He didn't get to go fucking...
Which is
like,
Norman Mailer.
Yeah. He didn't get to go shoot fucking lions or go bullfighting or fight in the fucking Spanish Civil War.
No, he'll talk a lot about it, but it's...
He didn't get to be that guy. He also, in that lovely exchange, he says, "You spend 6 months in the Vatican and see what it does to your testicles," which is another lovely line.
What's her fuck, Miss Thwaites, says...
"What she's doing to Mr. Walter is wrong, giving him them pills. He doesn't know, but I see her. Man his age, he needs his ease."
That's sexual ageism, lady.
Yeah, I mean, she's playing her role, the old lady who kind of like looks down on behaviors that she considers immoral, is a type, right?
Oh, for sure.
Is it the same kind of lady denied selling me a 12-pack of PBRs at the Duane Reade downstairs?
It's what like, an asshole.
Lady, get fucking bent, you know? I don't care how many of my wife's children you raised. Let me go out the way I want to go out, which is... rock hard and shooting my load.
Even if it takes a rectal probe.
Okay, so sometimes, you know, you got to do what you got to do. If you have to hit your ass wiped by a nurse on the last night of your life, you need to get some dudes to jam a probe up your ass.
Sure,
I love how Barbara just casually dismisses Carisi's, like,
am I right, counselor? He's just like, seldom.
That was great.
I can't believe I have to say this, but everyone should have just listened to Rollins when she said, "Is that a crime or an old man's dream?" Mm-hmm. And she's the one who knows the family sucks. Family suck. and totally sees through the daughter's whining.
And we're in season 16. We're in the heart of Bad Rollins here. This is
I don't know. There's probably been like 5 Kim episodes this season that we've mercifully somehow missed so far. We're going to hit like 4 of them in a row. It's going to be awful.
There's a title that's like Forgiving Rollins or something like that. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh God, I don't want to get that
really
one.
Really don't want to hit that one. Hopefully the world ends before we hit that. Okay. So he starts prattling on about masculinity and femininity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like the real point where Mailer's being channeled.
Yeah.
Then we get our next huge red flag. Delilah is a playwright and runs a struggling theater.
Yeah. Never trust those people.
No. They are hucksters.
If they've been in a black box since college, don't hang out with them.
Be trusted. Now we've got a much less interesting taken on our hands.
I can tell you I don't have money, but what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you.
Are her particular set of skills?
Yeah.
Rectal probe electro ejacking septuagenarians.
We might have to get the Liam Neeson audio from that.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not the first time we referenced it.
No. We do get some more latent chauvinism from our resident Mailer stand-in one last time before he croaks.
Yeah.
At the 20-minute mark, we start getting hit hard with a Barba Abuelita backstory. Mm. I love when they're in with the Emmy after he's croaked.
Yeah.
And he says, by the way, it looks like she pulled something else out of him, too. Immediately thereafter, Rudnick offers to show Carisi the intrarectal trauma of his literary hero, which I don't think many police officers have been able to, been lucky enough to be able to see if they want. Also, Rollins knows right away that it is rectal probe electro-ejaculation.
Oh, yeah. She knows exactly what it is.
Oh, yeah. She's clearly been with some dudes who are into it.
I mean, sometimes you bet things that are a little, you know, off the beaten path, you know.
This is like my favorite thing in an episode since a fucking Elfing Ears.
I mean, it's fantastic. I was like, excuse me, what?
Barbara was like that too. Oh, just glorious.
And then we double down on it too, because we have a journo scrum outside when Charmaine is going to court. And the journalists are like, how much did you pay for the rectal probe? Is one of the questions. What are you going to do with his sperm?
So much fun.
Fantastic. So glad. Shit.
I mean, the episode in and of itself isn't that great, but man.
I don't know. It's professional. But it
it's
has
professional,
these fun
but
moments.
It's not like fun. Or it's not like, it's not wall-to-wall fun.
No.
It's just, you know, this, whatever.
It's a season 16 episode that deals a lot with character development. So it is what it is. Now, I have a big problem with sort of the next part, right? After Charmaine pulls Vaughn out of the hospital and we get the little thing with the ambulance driver. Mm-hmm. And then we find out what her intentions were. She was going to fly him to a fucking lake in Quebec in February where they had happy times. You don't even know that there's going to be a lake there in February. It's just going to be a sea of white.
Well, yeah, but who cares? He doesn't want to die in a hospital. I get it.
Okay, but go someplace pleasant, you know?
Maybe that's the first time she rectal probe electro-ejected him.
Maybe they were staying, you know, in Quebec City, they have a hotel that they make out of ice every winter. And you can, like, sleep on a bed made out of ice, like, under giant furs. Maybe she ice-pegged him. And that's what the fond memories are.
Yeah, stands to reason that may have actually happened. So now we're in trial zone. There's a ton of testimony intercut with Barba trying to throw his G-Ma in a home.
There's a lot of testimony. There's a lot of trial.
Yeah.
My notes...
Oh, yeah, I'm almost done with my notes. Yeah. Trial does not make for good notes. Now, of course, we do also get the video that drops while they're in court, and he is torching his untalented daughter. Your writing is so bad that seeing you became tedious.
Well, and everybody at this, like, everybody dunks on Delilah's play.
Yeah.
It's really great. I kind of wish we had, like, we'd, like, skipped, I don't know, 2 minutes of courtroom and got, like, an excerpt of it just to see exactly how bad it was.
I wonder if there's fanfic of it.
Now, speaking of, is this the proper time to read this fanfic, or should we wait till we're done with our notes?
We're almost done with the notes. Let's knock out the notes and then hit it.
Let's knock them out.
Okay, so I do think they did a good job of subverting our expectations by casting, you know, I mean, Marcia Cross is kind of a notorious primetime vamp.
Sure.
And, you know, they use her work as the frame of reference only to have her actually be kind of all right. Like, she's a good wife.
Yeah.
I mean, once the video drops, I don't think there's any question that she's doing what he wants.
I think you're right. I think he's a piece of shit.
Sure.
But, yeah, you're right. I mean, she's doing what he wants.
Yeah. And, I mean, Delilah sucks even more than he does.
I suppose.
Because at least she was talented.
Well, I don't know.
She's not talented and also ruined her sister's relationship with her father. And was trying to just piggyback on her father's fame to save her fucking black box theater.
Possibly. But we don't actually know if she's untalented or not. Because we only have the word of a notorious misogynist to know that it's bad. Right, and she said, like, he wouldn't even read something that a girl wrote, you know.
Sure. But Charmaine is willing to plead to first degree reckless endangerment with probation to keep Delilah's adaptation from ever seeing the light of day.
That's true.
Like, I bet they probably lay in bed reading lines from the play to one another and laughing about how bad it was. Just laughing about it.
Yeah. That's their post-coital embrace is
dunking. That's their fucking warm-up, too. That's absolutely foreplay.
But yeah, that video is also kind of a Total Recall-esque thing because it's like, when was he cogent enough to make this video? And you would assume Charmaine would have produced it, but he did it without her knowledge. I guess he made it.
He went to Memos from Beyond or whatever the service was.
Well, and there was a date stamp on it. So that date stamp was 3 years before this episode, because the date was 2012. In 2012. Yeah. Exactly.
And the only note I have left is, I touched on it for a second, but I really can't tell if Jima offed herself. Because it feels like that's the subtext between what Rafa and his mother are saying to one another.
Well, that she's got like an addiction. That was like a thing that I was a little confused about. He mentioned something about addiction in his conversation with his mom.
No, that's how she speaks. Her diction is poor.
Oh.
I think it was just that she refused to leave.
She's obviously quite old and infirm. Mm-hmm. I mean, and she's living in a shitty walk-up apartment. Sure. Yeah. Now, one thing I would note, I only watched it once, so I didn't go back and confirm this, but it looked like the stairs go up another floor past Jima's apartment. Now, in New York City, there's a law capping walk-up apartments at 6 floors. You're not allowed to have a 7-floor walk-up building.
And they said she's 6th floor.
She's 6th floor, so they fudged that a little bit.
That also could have been the stairs to the roof, though.
That's true. It's possible.
Not saying it was, but
no, mine is like a really weird, scary ladder to get onto my roof, which I've not been on. But yeah, it's possible.
Yeah.
I think there might be a 7-floor walk-up in Chinatown, but I don't know if that's the case or not. But Josh,
I think it's fanfic time.
I think it's fanfic time, guys.
Hold on to your butts, everybody.
This is my new favorite website. I haven't really had cause to go to psychonautwiki.org in a while, but fanfiction.net has really captured my imagination. And this one is for the fans of this episode. So we got a little Barbara Benson fan service at the beginning there and kind of at the end as well. And as it turns out, as you might suspect, there is a author at fanfiction.net called Barson Addict.
Sure. Not surprised.
This person has written multiple, and by multiple I mean like there's dozens, I believe, of short pieces detailing their thoughts on the Barbara Benson romance.
Sure.
So this one is called Taking Care, and it's just a little smutty one-shot written for Valentine's Day. I'm going to read the whole thing because it's one page. It might take a minute, but you'll see why I'm going to read the whole thing. Josh will really appreciate this. Hey, you're late, Liv teased your husband as he came home well after Noah was in bed. Did your date with Carmen run late again? It wasn't a date, he grumbled, taking longer than normal to hang up his overcoat in the entryway. Carmen was convinced that her boss needed more exercise and had made it her mission to find an activity Barbara enjoyed. This week it was racquetball. Raphael flashed her a tired smile on his way back to their bedroom. I'm just going to get changed. Okay, love, she replied absently, focused on the television. She quickly found herself caught up in the drama on screen, and she didn't realize how long it was taking for Barbara to change until the show was over almost 20 minutes later. Puzzled, Liv went in search of her husband, frowning when she found him standing in front of his closet. Roth, everything all right? He had removed his shoes and blazer and loosened his tie, but that was it. He sighed heavily. I may have neglected to stretch properly before the match, and I think I sprained my elbow. It hurts when I move it, and I don't have any strength to grasp with my right hand. Rafi, why didn't you say anything? He blushed, embarrassed. I'm a grown adult. I didn't think I'd need you to undress me. Even our son manages to get changed by himself now, and he's 4 years old. A shiver ran down her back at the words, our son. There are few things she finds more attractive than Raphael in dad mode. Well, it's not like I've never undressed you, ... That's different, Liv. She smiled slyly and stepped in front of him, toying with his tie. It doesn't have to be, she whispered, and gently used the tie to pull him closer. Let me help you, she breathed before kissing him soundly. I'm going to take a sip right here. It's about to get hot, guys. She sucked his tongue and... I'm sorry.
No, she sucked his tongue.
She sucked his tongue into her mouth, deftly undoing his tie and slipping it off before throwing it in the direction of her closet. She broke the kiss and nipped and sucked along his jawline to his ear. You always take care of everyone else. Let me take care of you tonight, Mr. Barba, she purred, taking his earlobe between her teeth and pulling gently. His heart was racing, and his breath merely pants. Olivia, he whined, using his uninjured arm to pull her into him, thrusting their lower bodies together. She didn't hold back the moan when she felt his hardness straining against his trousers. Suddenly impatient, she pulled the suspenders off his shoulders, being careful not to jostle his sore arm. She deftly unhooked his pants, and they immediately pulled at his feet. He stepped out of them and then fell back onto the bed, sitting on the edge. She reached out and slowly unbuttoned his shirt from the top, trailing kisses along the exposed flesh. With the last button undone, she was kneeling between his legs, her warm breath hitting his erection that was now painfully hard. Looking up at him through hooded eyes, Liv grasped the waistband of his underwear and pulled, murmuring, up. He stood up just long enough to get his boxers down and then dropped back down to the mattress. He tangled his good hand in her hair, gently guiding her up into his lap. Come here, he encouraged. I need to kiss you again. Their lips met in a scorching kiss that left them both panting. Olivia slowly eased backwards off his lap, standing between his legs. Careful of his injured elbow, she pulled off his shirt, one arm at a time, tossing it onto the floor. I want to taste you, she said throatily, and Barbara barely had the time to register her words before her warm, wet mouth closed around the head of his cock. His whole world shrunk to the goddess kneeling between his legs and the pleasure coursing through him. Olivia moaned at the salty taste of the pre-cum leaking from his thickness. Sorry. She fleetingly wondered why she didn't do this more often, but soon became distracted by her husband's whimpers. Liv. Olivia, please, love, go easy on me, he whined in Spanish, too far gone to realize what language he was speaking. She hummed her descent, taking him even deeper and running her tongue along his shaft. After a moment, Olivia pulled back, letting his arousal slide out of her mouth. She looked up and was not disappointed by the view above her. Barbara's head was thrown back, eyes closed. He had one hand fisted in the sheets in an attempt to ground himself. His mouth was slightly open, and as she started to run her fingernails along his thighs, he let out a low moan. Oh, Livia, please, he whispered. Please what? She asked, returning her attention to his cock and placing teasing kisses along the underside of the shaft. Raphael couldn't string a coherent thought together. Liv smiled to herself and decided to end her torture. She placed one last kiss on the slit at the head of his penis, then she moved her hands to his hips in anticipation. He could never hold back from thrusting into her mouth when she took him deep, and this time was no exception. Liv bobbed her head a few more times before Raphael sat up straight and put his hand in her hair. Liv, he said, his voice full of warning. She pulled back longer enough to whisper, come for me, Raphael. Then took him back into her mouth, sucking until he was completely spent. He flopped back onto the mattress with a final moan, and Liv crawled up next to him, drawing patterns on his chest while he recovered. Minutes later, he opened his eyes and smiled, looking at his wife with a loving expression. Thank you for taking care of me, mi amor. Liv leaned up and kissed his mouth softly. Always, she whispered, pulling the blankets over them both. The end.
Man, I was really hoping there was going to be some rectal probe electro-ejaculation in
there. Well, I didn't Google that search term yet. I assume that's on the Carisi page.
Sure, yeah.
You know, interesting. This is probably like the dawn of Ralisi, right? It hadn't really even started at this point, had it?
Well, I mean, she's still fucking Amaro, I think. Or she's just recently been fucking Amaro.
Maybe the sight of an 80-year-old man's electro-probed asshole got the juices flowing. On that note.
Okay, I think we're ready to rate this, right?
Yeah, I think so, man. So obviously, guys, we rank these episodes every week. We have a rigorous 4-part scale on which we judge. We're trying to come up with a composite score which will allow us to rank this episode against all the other ones of this wild and wonderful show that we will eventually have seen. Now, we rank on a 1 through 10 scale, 1 being bad, 10 being fantastic. Quality, guests, how problematic the episode was, and the depth and breadth of lives ruined. Now, I gotta say on that last one, let's go back to front on this one. So, depth and breadth of lives ruined. It's a 1, right? Nobody's life is ruined in this.
Well, except, I mean, I think Delilah maybe deserves it, but I think her life is ruined.
No, but she's still getting her cut of the fucking pie.
No, but the very public pantsing, and
yeah.
Everyone saw that tape.
Presumably, she's getting a sizable cut of an ample fortune, though, so
sure.
She can go nurse her embarrassment in Gestad.
Sure.
Now, I'm giving that a 1.
That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, and she probably did deserve that pantsing, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Now, the next one, though, problematic? It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's fun.
To have dear old dad, like, publicly pantsing his own daughter is pretty funny.
Yep.
Rectal probe electro-ejaculation.
Yeah.
The fact that
electrojacking is gold.
Multiple times. That's really something. That's really something.
Yeah. I mean, it's out there. We've seen 122 other episodes of SVU. You know what they never mentioned? Rectal probe electro-ejaculation.
Yeah. Now, I know you watched this twice, so you probably have thought about this more, but the fact that we are led to believe through most of this episode, and it's possible it still is the case.
Yeah, though I think it's unlikely.
That this woman was, like, raping her husband to get a piece of the dead man's money pie.
Sure.
Which she still... I don't know how much he wanted to have another kid. She certainly wanted to have...
He's not going
to
be around. All he cares about is legacy.
Of course.
I don't think he has any problem with having another kid that he doesn't ever have to fucking see.
Exactly. But for her, getting that other kid does ensure a substantial
bigger
raise. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's somewhat problematic. I don't know. What is this, like a 5? Because what is problematic is quite problematic.
There's also the glorious moment in medical examiners where he asks if Carisi wants to see the intrarectal trauma of his literary hero. That's super fun.
I mean, that is fantastic. I mean, this might be like a 6 or a
79 and stiff as a varnished eel.
Okay, this is a 7. This is a 7, right?
Yeah.
Because 79 and stiff as a varnished eel is one of the gnarlier lines.
Yeah.
That's good shit.
And
right
there's
there.
Also the like Barba just dismissing Carisi shit, which is really fun.
Yeah, like, that was a lot of fun. Yeah. I like that. There's a lot of fun moments in this one. It was a fun episode to watch. It drags in the court scene and it...
Yeah. We at least get a little shudder of fun in the middle of the court scene when the tape drops.
But. Yeah. It is, I mean, one of the things they did sort of... Like, in these light years, they do make the courtroom scenes more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it helps that they have accomplished actor of stage.
But, I mean, there's definitely times when Cabot's the ADA, and it kind of drags at the end. There are other times where it doesn't. It's great.
Right. And then there's Stone.
And then there's Stone.
No.
And then there's Greylick.
Yeah.
haven't looked to see if there's any Greylick Stone fanfic. They stare confusedly at each other.
Anyway.
Guests. Robert Vaughn is great.
Fun, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Marsha Clark is doing... Marsha Clark.
Marsha Cross.
Marsha Cross.
Not Marsha Clark. Very different people. This episode would be very bad if Marcia Clark were playing the Marcia Cross role. Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe she could play the Susie Essman role.
Yeah, maybe. Probably not as fun, though.
No, not as fun. Oh. Susie Essman's great.
Uh-huh.
The daughters are both fine in their role.
Mm-hmm.
I think the guests
Mercedes
are,
Mercedes' rule is fine.
Quite good. Yeah.
You know? I mean, she's woefully underused.
Exactly.
You're like, wait, you got an Academy Award winner, an Academy Award and Tony winner,
mm-hmm.
and this is all you ever doing, and you never ever in another episode. Like, what the fuck?
The Fisher King is one of those movies, man, where it's like, it was like so big at the time, like in the zeitgeist, and it's one of those movies that even in, like, I'm a big
Terry Gilliam fan,
but I haven't seen The Fisher King.
I haven't seen it since probably 1999.
30 years. Yeah, exactly. I do think about it sometimes, I think, because I think there's like, I believe there's a scene where like Robin Williams is laying down in the middle of the park.
Yeah, you definitely see Mark Dort.
Yeah. So I think about that. I think about Hanging Dong in Central Park occasionally, as one does.
Yeah.
but... Oh, speaking of which, I saw a guy just like peeing on the street right next to Central Park yesterday.
That's fun.
It happens. Yeah. I didn't see his dog.
That's not as fun.
No, I'm fine with it. It's fine. I'm okay with it.
I think it'd be more fun if you saw Dong.
I mean...
Anyway.
that could be the title. So
I mean, I don't know how we have a title and it doesn't have electro-ejacking in it.
So, guess, Josh, I think they're all quite good. I don't see any way to like dock it for the guest performances.
Yeah, there's definitely nothing bad about any of the guests. I don't know that they have a ton to do.
I mean, Vaughn has a pretty
Vaughn
juicy
role. Does, and Marcia Cross actually gets to like step outside of her sort of.
There's a little twist with her at the end, yeah. And she does kind of get to smile and seem warm and matronly at the end when we expect her to be the vamp, as you said, the whole time. I'm inclined to give it like a 6 or 7 again because I think the guests are pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. I'm fine with either of those. Whichever you want to go with is fine.
I don't know. I mean, I think Robert Vaughn has a lot of fun. And so I'm going to give it a 7 because I don't think the next one is going to score very well. We'll see. Overall quality. The funny thing about it is it has these like moments of glee. Uh-huh. And it has good actors in it. It's interesting because it has like the B plot is a little different, but it is a kind of a by the numbers forgettable one.
Yeah.
Sure. Rectal probe electro eject is definitely
wonderful.
Thrilled that they had somebody doing research on that. Really great stuff, guys. So I don't know. Like a 4 or 5?
Yeah.
Do you have a preference?
4. I think it's a 4.
You think it's a 4? Okay. I'm going to give it 5.
I think we've already rated it for the reasons that we...
Maybe.
I think that the things that are good have already been accounted for because we did this backwards.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right. So that's going to give it a 4.75. The last 4.75 we gave out to was Home. That's Paperboy's Housing a Bird. Yeah, that makes sense to me. So, yeah, 4.75. I think
sure.
I think that's fine. You know, season 16 is a weird one because, you know, there's clearly this tension between bringing Carisi in and shipping Amaro off.
Yeah.
And you can tell they're doing something kind of weird with the characters. The squad doesn't feel set the way that it does in other seasons, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely a transitional.
But Carisi was fun in this one. He was the only one that really got to do anything fun, I thought. And we were spared the worst of Noah, though. Liv needs to clean up, man. There was toys on every inch of her apartment. Like,
there really
every
were.
Inch. It happens, but you just follow the toddler around picking up after him. That's what you do. But guys, I think it's time to roll the next one, isn't
Indeed.
It?
Indeed.
Yeah, what are we going to watch, Josh?
So, heading over to episode .lol, which was built for this podcast by Friend of the Pod, Flett. Tape is spinning.
Mm-hmm.
Bill and Ted. Not happy. And we have landed in season 17 on episode 15, Collateral Damages.
Interesting.
Summary. An undercover sting leads to the takedown of an online pedophile ring and the arrest of 2 high-profile suspects. That's it.
Yeah, interesting that we've only watched 3 season 17 episodes so far.
So we've got Mike Dodds, Sergeant Mike Dodds is back. This one will have Jessica Phillips reprising her role as Assistant Corporation Counsel Pippa Cox in a particularly personal story to her character.
Uh-oh.
It's got Josh Pice returning as Deputy Commissioner Hank Abraham, who we last saw in October Surprise.
Yeah.
Susie Essman is back. Back-to-back
She's
weeks
back.
With Susie
back-to-back
Essman.
Susies. Yeah.
We've got Peter Gallagher as Dodds' dad. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it.
I don't know any of the guest stars. Maybe I will end up knowing them, but I don't recognize these names.
As usual, we are on all the socials as Munch My Benson. So Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Yep.
Munch My Benson. MunchMyBenson at gmail.com is our email address. MunchMyBenson.com has all of the information that you would need to find merch or do whatever with the podcast. Yeah, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/MunchMyBenson. $5 a month. Very cheap.
Yep. There's some exclusive content there, and you also get the episodes a week early. They're not as cleaned up as the...
But they're also much longer.
And sometimes we talk about some really random shit. I cut well over a half an hour out of the last one.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of very random stuff that I cut out.
and there's a monthly movie club episode. Anyway.
Yeah, this one will have dropped... When does this drop? This one... 8/29. This will drop like a couple days after... On the 25th,
real regrets about choosing The Boy Who Loved Trolls, but that's what
we're
doing. We're
watching The Boy Who Loved Trolls. Sam Waterston is either a troll or an elf or some kind of wood spirit. So is William H. Macy.
He's an old troll that's about to die.
Oh, nice. Yeah. William H. Macy's in it, too. They both look ridiculous in the photos that I've seen.
Yep.
It's a very short movie, so even if it's terrible...
Mercifully, it's under an hour. I don't know. Just everyone should... munch everyone else's Bensons.
You have the talk about rectal probe electroejaculation early in your relationship. Because if that's what you're into, man, don't live your life without getting probed.
Sure. Take it, you know? Throw it up there.
You know, and to the lovely writers out at fanfiction.net, you know, keep
pumping them out.
Keep supplying us with content, because that shit is great.
If you're taking requests, rectal probe electroejaculation.
Yeah. Come on. Work it in, guys. Yeah. Work it in.
That's what she said. fuck.
I think that's it.
Yes.
Get on and keep munching, guys. We love you.
That was the housekeeper. Mr. Briggs just went to the hospital. Apparent heart attack.
The daughter said that he had a heart condition. If the wife knew and was secretly feeding him those pills?
Yeah, that's assault 3. Recklessly causing physical injury to another person, maybe even attempted murder. Am I right, counselor?
Seldom. Unless the daughters can give you proof that the wife knew about the heart condition and was exacerbating it, you've got nothing.